Blog Talk Radio.
Recovering. Establishing contact. All systems operational.
Welcome to the Fort Solitude Radio Network.
And welcome to this edition of The Game. I'm Russ Cohen. We've got Nico Riesgo, and we have special guest minor leaguer Pat Austin. How are you guys doing?
Hey, what's up, Russ?
Thanks.
Good. Well, Nico, a lot went on in baseball this week. Roy Halladay had a perfect game. We'll get to all that, but I thought I'd let you talk a little bit about Pat. I think you played with him, and let's hear his story a bit.
Yeah, Pat, tell us a little bit about your career. You were one of the players that I ran into in Reading, Pennsylvania with the Phillies, and you had already had a few years under your belt, a veteran that came onto the team that really helped us out down the stretch. Tell us a little bit about your career.
Okay. Thanks for having me on, guys. 1986, I was a fifth-round draft pick for the Detroit Tigers. I spent 5 years in the minor leagues with that organization, finally making it to the 40-man roster in my fourth year, and then was subsequently traded to the St. Louis Cardinals, then to the Baltimore Orioles, and eventually to the Phillies, where I met Nico, as he spoke earlier, in Reading. It was a great experience, a lot of travel, a lot of hard work as well. But I would not have definitely traded it for the world, and getting to meet a lot of great players, learn a lot about the game of baseball, and just enjoy general experiences across the country.
Well, I do want to tell people, if anybody wants to call in and talk to Pat or just talk some baseball, it's 347-994-1040, 347-994-1040. Pat, I'll tell you what, playing up in that Reading area had to be fun, and I will say that I went to the first Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs game. Have you, I don't know where you live in the country now, but I have to tell you, it's a nice little ballpark. You may want to take it in at some point.
Okay. I'm currently in Atlanta, so I've actually become a little bit of a Braves fan.
And the young guy, I'm a Met fan, but I'll let you keep talking.
The young guy, Jason Hayward, has just really opened my eyes. He's having a really outstanding year so far this year for such a young player, so I'm really excited to see him on a day-to-day basis. I have heard of the Lehigh Valley, so the next time I'm up in that area, I would definitely have to check him out.
Now, Pat, you played right up to how many years officially was that, almost in the minor leagues?
A total of 6 years with
6 years
four
total.
Different teams, yes.
With four different teams. Now that's quite an accomplishment, because they say once you get over that three year mark, I mean, you're a player that's right there, that's ready to go to the big leagues after 3 years in the minor leagues, and it's just a matter of getting a phone call and injury or something or just a key opening on a roster spot. Tell us about your experience being on the 40-man roster and then kind of being taken off the 40-man roster, and also at the time, we've just written a book called Strike 3 about the period where the players went on strike, and tell us a little bit about where you kind of affected and had to make a decision there, whether to play and cross the line or what were your thoughts during that time?
Okay, sure. I can tell you, first of all, there is quite a bit of work involved in actually making it. Even though I was on the 40-man roster, I mean, with Hall of Famers like Lou Whitaker, future Hall of Famers like Lou Whitaker and Alan Trammell ahead of you, and then you go to the Cardinals and they have guys like Jose Aquindo and Ozzie Smith, it's pretty hard to just move those guys out of the way. So you just kind of stick with it. You bounce around, and you know, if everything falls into place for you, you tend to have a chance to land in an organization that does have some openings and are looking to bring younger guys up. towards the end, and as the strike happened, I was actually relocating to Atlanta during the time, and it was quite a decision. There were several people who had asked me to come and do some tryouts, but quite honestly, at that time, I'm pretty strict about rules, and I personally did not want to go ahead and cross that line and become, what were they calling them back then, Nico Scabs or something like that? So,
yeah, Scabs, replacement player.
Yeah, so there were a couple, I think, that made it and stuck, but my own personal experience and what I was going through at the time, it just wasn't the right thing for me to do to go out there and cross and after being with the union for so many years, to actually go out there and change my mind and turn things around. I wasn't able to do that from a personal perspective.
Pat, I'm looking up your minor league numbers, and you were quite a good fielder, actually, 963 fielding percentage, mostly at second. I see one year you played a little at third. But your batting average was really good. I mean, 289 lifetime, a couple of years you hit 300, a couple of years you hit 297. How come you couldn't stick? What was the main reason? Was it at the time when you were with Detroit, they were too deep? And
yeah.
Then what about when you moved on?
Yeah, Detroit was too deep. The Cardinals were actually deep as well. When I got to the Orioles, they had the Rifkin brothers. So a lot of it was timing. And then, when I got to the Phillies, I actually, and I don't know if a lot of your listeners know this or not, but I broke Vince Coleman's stolen base record in the minor leagues.
Wow.
So while I was with the Phillies, during one of my stolen base attempts, I tore a muscle in my back. And then while I was on the disabled list, we parted ways, and I pretty much have been injury prone in my back and found that I had a degenerative disc. So that, for the most part, is what prevented me from going on further at that point in time after the 5 years, 6 years.
How many stolen bases did you have that year?
That year
had the record.
In the Appalachian League, the total, I think Vince's total was 45, and I ended up with 49.
Wow.
And a half
season. Yeah, and that's in a short season, isn't it?
Yes, that was in a short season.
That's incredible.
So, looking at today's baseball, you said you like Jason Hayward. Did you happen to catch Roy Halladay's perfect game at all?
I sure did. It was a masterpiece. I just sat there and just watched him. It seemed like every pitch, just his concentration and focus and what he wanted to do throughout the game was outstanding. And it's fun to play behind those guys, believe me.
Yeah, because this way you're always doing something and you don't have to wait too long and he's not putting anybody on base.
Exactly.
But I have to ask you, have you ever been a part of a no-hitter or a perfect game?
I have not.
Yeah,
have
see,
not.
I'm a Met fan, and I can honestly tell you the Mets have never had a no-hitter or a perfect game. And it's distressing for me because I've been to games where guys have had no-hitters for 8 1/3. I believe there's only two teams left in Major League Baseball that haven't done it. I can't think of the other one off the top of my head, but the Mets are the other one, and it's but to watch Halladay do it was pretty amazing, and no real surprise. I mean, he was bound to do something like that. The fact that he did it against Florida, a little surprising because, Florida has some good hitters.
Yeah, and if I remember, it was the first time their organization had ever been no-hit as well. So.
Yeah. So that was definitely something different. So what do you think about the Braves? The last time we talked about the Braves, I had actually picked them to win the division and the Phillies to win the wild card, and last time we talked, I think the Braves were down by the bottom, and now they've been hot.
Yeah, they've got some really good young talent. Their pitching staff with, of course, Hudson and the young kids coming up have really been surprising. And I think as their offense goes, and now that Chipper seems to be warming up a little bit, and McCann starting to get back online, I think they went through, a normal offensively slow period, but they're starting to pick it back up again, and things are starting to turn around and look much better.
Yeah, it looks like now, Nico, they have a real chance to give the Phillies a run for most of the year because, again, as I was saying, once their hitting did anything, that they had tremendous pitching.
Yeah, and they do got Bobby Cox in the dugout, and this is his final year, and I think he's going to try to motivate them as much as he can and give them a push. And I think the players want to win one for the Gipper.
Yeah, they probably do. I could tell you, I could care less about Bobby Cox, especially when he's smoking in the press room. But I won't get into that again. But that's okay. I think right now he is a great manager, and this team will rise to the occasion. Looking elsewhere in the East, Nico, all I'll say is this, and Pat, you may be able to chime in on this, but I guess once you've got 5 years and a certain amount of innings under your belt as a major league pitcher, you could decide that you don't want to be sent to the minors. So for three consecutive times, the Mets have asked Oliver Perez to kind of go down to the minors and sort of, fix his problems. He won't go. So now they basically have a $13 million, mop-up guy. Any thoughts on that, Pat?
Yeah, that's an interesting one, and that's, of course, the whole part of the business that a lot of times, we have issues with, because I can see his point from a player. Minor leagues are nowhere near as fun as actually being up there in the majors and the stadiums and traveling. But you got to get your work in, honestly, and it is still a team sport, no matter how much individual participation there is as well. So now, as you said, you have a high-priced player that's really not contributing to the overall success of the team, and quite honestly, I don't know how that's going around the clubhouse, but there has to be some issues there.
Yeah, there's definitely some issues. I hear it's not going over very well, and it looks like a story came out where maybe last week there was some talk maybe the Mets might put him on the DL and let him, see a psychiatrist and try and cure things, and apparently, the Mets didn't think that was necessary. So who knows? Right now he's just a guy that's not really helping the team. But, Pat, when you look around elsewhere around baseball, what are some of the other things you like seeing?
Well, I tell you, I'm really excited. I'm an Ohio boy, so for Cincinnati to be playing the way they are right now, that was really my first, the Big Red Machine back in the day was one of my first favorite teams. So I've always had an inkling for Cincinnati Reds, and to see them come back and play well and a lot of excitement there in that city has been really interesting. I'm getting
well,
a lot
what's
of
been the, What's been the key difference there?
Well, I really think that, they've got some young players. Honestly, I believe that Dusty has done a tremendous job of pulling together as a team, and their pitching has started to come around a little bit more as well. They had some young guys that kind of got beat up there for a little bit. But it looks like they're starting to settle in and get themselves together a little bit. So hopefully that will continue on as well. I know they've got a tough road to go with St. Louis in that division as well. And then, of course, out west, I'm always interested to see what Arizona does. They just seem to always rebuild with not always a gang of the top name type players, but they always find a way to win and to be in the hunt. So I think it'll be another interesting season around the National League. I'm a little less up on the American League, other than, of course, the Yankees-Red Sox rivalry.
Nope, I definitely agree, and I have to say that, there's one host of a baseball show, Pat, that isn't very surprised that the Reds are ripping it up. Actually, I picked them to win their division, and the other two people on our show, Lisa Marie Latino, is not available today, but otherwise she would be hearing the same thing that I told you so. Now, it's a long season, but you should have heard Nico. He's like, the Reds? How the hell are you picking the Reds?
Yeah, that was. I think Russ pulled it out of the hat, but obviously he's done some research, and I think they made a key decision early in the year when they decided to bring Leak up, one of their draft picks, straight from Arizona State, straight to the big leagues. They had a decision similar to the Washington Nationals bringing up Steven Strasburg. The Nationals decided to send Strasburg down to get a little bit more tuning. And it turns out that the Reds decided to keep Leak in the big leagues to start off fast. And the Reds kind of their strategy has worked. They got the young pitcher up in the big leagues. He's winning ball games. They're in first place. And the Nationals, it looks like if they would have had Strasburg, they could be right in first place in the hunt themselves.
Well, yeah. Strasburg will be up June 8th.
I think it's maybe too long.
Yeah, I would have tended to kind of have left him. I thought he had a really good spring, and I thought he could just carry that in and kind of start the season off well with Washington. Of course, they didn't do that. They've struggled. Now they're going to call him up, and, you know, it's a good kid, but that to me would be like a lot of pressure. All of a sudden, you know, 2 months into the season, hey, we need you to come up and kind of stop this thing. So.
Well, Pat, part of the reason they did that was so they could avoid having to lose a year of arbitration with him. So they're waiting for that date to pass. So that's, again, the business of the game sort of creeping its way in. And that's the only reason, because, of course, everybody knows that he would have made it easily.
Absolutely.
So
speaking of the business of the game, I want to talk about one of our biggest chapters in our book, Strike 3, Chapter 11. We talk about change could help the game. And we talk about the fact that minor leaguers that are not on the 40-man roster are not included into the union and not included in the benefits and have no say-so on their salary structure. They could be paid as low as $800 a month, and they pretty much got to go out and do the same work day in, day out that major leagues have to do, except they're not on the cameras every day. How do you feel about the possibility of minor leaguers being included into the union, Pat?
Well, that's another tough one. Honestly, in my mind, it would probably be best to create a separate union for the minor league players. I think there just may be too many to include in the current union structure as it is today, but I definitely believe that those in the minor leagues that are doing the same type of work and actually probably under more difficult circumstances, as you know, definitely should have some types of representation because, as you stated there many times, the pay scale's different. You know, the places you stay, the types of travel you make, just anything and everything. Some of the locker rooms aren't very privy. So, you know, I think some representation is warranted. I don't necessarily know that including it in the major league union would work, but definitely something for those minor league players I think is warranted.
Makes sense. And Pat, I'm looking at a few old articles about you from the Reading Eagle, and they questioned your arm, although they said you don't necessarily need a great arm for second base. And at some point, I'm going to be moving to second base just from my softball team because I'm a 47-year-old guy, and the throw from third is getting harder and harder. But what did you think about that? Did you ever read that in the papers at the time?
Yeah, that was absolutely one of the comments that I had to shake off. And, you know, starting out playing third, and I did some, you know, mixed in. I came up through college as a shortstop, and I did a lot of pitching. So the question about the arm was more of a Steve Sack syndrome.
Okay.
He may not know where it goes when he lets it loose. A lot of times that, as I found, led back to my footwork. But it's one of those things that once that stigma is placed on you, you really are fighting through, you know, getting rid of that because everyone starts to use that as their reason why they don't particularly want to move you up as fast as you would normally.
Yeah, and with Reading, you had a year 305, 21 stolen bases.
Yeah, that was incredible. We got a chance to play together, and I got a chance to see him play, one of the best second basemen I've seen. And just a good, great player to have on the team because other than second base, like you said, if somebody got hurt at third, Pat could easily win over there and play third base, or if he had to play short one day, he would play short. And then just every single day to be, he would hit. And you don't normally get that kind of hitting production from a smaller second baseman, but he was on base all the time, a key hit, two-out hit, a man on second base. He would drive in the run. Just a 3-4 hitter as a second baseman.
Yeah, I got to say that one of the funnest times that year, Nico, was when we were playing the Tigers and they had that little shift all the way over to right field because they knew, you know, Russ, pretty much I was a right center, right, you know, not a Judy guy. I'd hit it hard over there, but for
right.
the most part, you know, I lived right center to right field. And, you know, it was late in the game, I think maybe the last inning or something, and they had that shift on where they moved their whole outfield shaded toward right, and I pulled one down the left field line and scored a guy from first base. It was pretty funny. They had never seen me pull the ball before, they said. But just goes to show you, if you continue to work on your game and no matter what people think, you can always overcome, even when folks are trying their best to keep you from doing it. There's always
now, I will
and that's
say,
the thing. You are a pure hitter. You're a pure hitter from the right side. You can take the ball the other way. And I think that's the key to any great hitter, if they can go the other way. And you obviously proved that you had that other way mastered, locked down. And when they put the shift on you to defend it, you had that canny awareness and that smartness to say, hey, I'm just going to turn on this ball. And you were able to turn on it, and that's just excellent hitting.
Pat, maybe you could talk about this. Somebody in our chat room is mentioning the fact that he's a Brewers fan and doesn't like the fact that they're bringing players up and down all the time and then they're constantly changing the roster. And what does that do to team morale? Because I said I think they need to develop more pitching and then hold on to those guys. But what are your feelings?
Yeah, that the up and down, I tell you, that's a tough one. You know, that's, I believe, another part of the business that we end up having to deal with both as players and fans. You know, as the organization's trying to find things, you know, a lot of times we're not privy to, you know, who's been called up, how many times, how long they have to leave them up there before they have to make other business decisions about them. But it makes it tough to get a good team, a unified team where everybody's comfortable with those around them. And it also kind of makes you look over your shoulder like, you know, who's next and
mm-hmm.
how do we get around this?
Now, is it too early to say, Nico, that maybe the comeback player of the year, as a buddy of mine in the chat room has pointed out, Scott Rowland's got 13 homers. He's hitting .290. Now, we always knew he can do it, but we also always knew he gets injured. Just as an example, he only hit 11 each of the last two seasons. So maybe comeback player of the year is in his future.
Yeah, no, he's having an awesome year. Another guy is Vladimir Guerrero, who's just kind of had this transformation. And then also Vernon Wells of the Toronto Blue Jays. You can't leave them out. These players, all three of these players, have really found themselves this year. And whatever they're doing, I hope they keep doing it because they're having fantastic years. And their teams are really close to first place. So that's the advantage they're giving their team.
I can tell you, Vlad Guerrero, for whatever reason, excuse me, was available in my fantasy league up until this week. So I guess a lot of people were still buying the fact that maybe he wasn't all that. But, Nico, let's pick a few games. Pat, we'll let you do it too. We've only got a few minutes left. I'll tell you, I like a game right here. Looking at it, it's Kyle Kendrick, Derek Lowe in Atlanta. I'm going to take Atlanta. I really like that game because I think Lowe is bouncing back, Kendrick's up and down, and Atlanta is a very good home team. What do you think, Pat?
I would absolutely agree with you. With where things are and with the last couple of appearances that I've seen Lowe throw, he's done really well. And, again, their bats seem to be coming alive, and they definitely play well in Atlanta. So I agree with that pick.
Yeah, I would agree with you, too. If it was Halladay on the mound, it'd probably be a different story. But I think Kendrick is just not there yet.
Yeah, I think Kendrick's sort of like a work in progress. Now, here's a game. Nico, you know every once in a while I give somebody, like, the absolute lock. Like, there's no way you could literally take it to the bank. Here is the lock. CC Sabathia at home on Friday over Kevin Millwood and the Orioles. Even though Kevin Millwood's pitched well, he's 0-5.
Yeah, I'd say, yeah, you definitely put the mortgage the house on that one. Yeah, there's no doubt. CeCe needs a big game.
How many points?
Rough outings. And he's playing at home.
Nico, how many points is that game worth?
Oh, that's worth $1,000. Yeah, $1,000 in the game.
Okay, so you could have some fun with that one. That one stuck out a little bit. Now here's one. I'm going to give people a long shot here, but KC at home again on that Friday. Zach Greinke somehow is 1-6 with a 3.39 ERA. I would have to say, just for law of averages, now he's going against Weaver, but I'm still going to have to pick Greinke and say, listen, at some point this guy's got to win. He's pitching good.
Yeah, I agree with you. Well, hands down, Zach Greinke is just every outing he's going there, he's keeping the teams under three runs. He's doing his job. He's just not getting the support. I guess it's been his history. He didn't get the support last year, any year he's pitched there. So I think it's just a matter of time. And since he's playing at home, I would have to give him the benefit of the doubt and say this team
is
going to come through for him.
Yeah,
what do you think
about
City
on a Friday night? Zach Greinke definitely will be doing his thing, but I think the bats will get him get enough of it done in a close game.
Okay, and I'll tell you, it's amazing because he was 16-8 last year, but if you look at his real numbers, you look at his innings pitched, his strikeouts, his walks, all those are in line with last year. He's got 54 strikeouts in 69 innings. He's only walked 14. He's got a great whip. Team just doesn't score runs for him. So, you know, if anybody's looking at Zach Greinke thinking he's lost it, he really hasn't lost it. It's just his team has to give him a little more run support. And Pat, we only have a few minutes left, so tell people if you have a website or if they can get how they can get in touch with you, or if not, we'll just have you back on the show.
Yeah, I'd love to get back on the show. The best way is I'm actually, Nico and I have started to team up on some things, so they can find me at mlpo.org.
Okay.
And I'd be glad to definitely come back anytime you guys ask.
Okay. And Nico, we want to let people know that Strike 3 is available on the iPad now. So if you have an iPad, you can get our book. And I promised to digitally sign anybody's book, but, you know, kind of not the same as signing a regular book, but I guess I could send a file. I mean, we'll figure out how to do it. But also go to sportsology.net. Also, keep in mind, Nico, in about 2 weeks, I'll be out on the West Coast at the NHL Draft, but I still am going to take in my first game at Chavez Ravine, so that should be fun. It's against the Yankees, too.
Oh, yeah, go to Manningwood. You're going to love it there. And eat all the hot dogs you can eat in the bleachers there. They got all you can eat there. So
tofu dog. I only eat tofu dog. I don't eat regular
kosher,
hot dogs.
Okay.
No,
okay,
tofu.
Tofu.
I don't even eat kosher.
Oh, okay. No kosher? Okay.
No. So they have tofu dogs there. So I'll be looking forward to eating those there. Nico, tell everybody how they can play the game and about MOPO.org while we've got another couple minutes.
Yeah, visit us online, www.mlpo.org. We're promoting youth baseball worldwide. Play the game with us. It's very simple. Just click play the game and put in your day's predictions. Tell us who's going to win and score points. You get 1,000 points for every win. Also, our link and our nutrition products is a great link. It's doing a lot of business for us. Providing healthy nutrition for all baseball players who are looking for more vitamins and nutrients as they play the game. And it's been quite a success for us.
All right. Well, listen, everybody out there, thanks for tuning in. That was this week's edition of The Game. We'll catch everybody next time.
Thanks, Russ.
Thanks, Russ.
All right. Thanks, guys. See ya.
Bye-bye.